You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. the Brooklyn J. Billis, and this it's episode 313. Woo! On today's show, we're joined by Ashwin Ramnath of Posting and Toasting for the conclusion of the thrilling two-part series, Should the Knicks Draft a Big? On today's show, we explore this question by looking at Duke big man Marvin Bagley III. Before we get started, I just got to give a quick shout-out to Jack McCullough in Tasmania, which I believe is in Australia, because A, I'm a genius, and B, I did a report on the Tasmanian Devil in third grade that I'm still very proud of. I drew a Tasmanian Devil on the cover. It was awesome. But yeah, Tasmania in Australia. Jack reached out to me on Twitter. He said, I think I'm the person who is physically farthest from you in the world. That might be true. I don't know. I'm not a cartographer. You know what I mean? Map making is not my expertise. But if you think you're farther away from me than Jack McCullough in Tasmania, reach out to me. If you can verify it, you know, I'll give you a shout out. Right now, Jack's setting the bar. If you're in outer space right now, if you're an astronaut in one of the, you know, space shuttles, I know we don't do that in the US anymore, but maybe like a Chinese astronaut, get at me. I know you guys love basketball. So, not to generalize. This is getting weird. Why don't we just stop this? See what you made me do, Jack? Come on, I'm just trying to be friendly here. And now you got me saying all kinds of stuff. But anyway, let's just cut the BS and start the show. Let's talk about Marvin Bagley III. Let's talk about bigs. Let's bring in Ashwin. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
Marvin Bagley. The basics. No combine measurements because he's the worst of cowards, the yellowest of bellies. But he's a 19.2-year-old out of freshman, so 0.1 older than Carter. Huge difference. Also out of Duke, he is 6'10 with a little baby 7-foot wingspan compared to 7'4.5 for Carter. And he is 221 pounds, so more lithe, more comparable to like, not saying he's going to reach this guy's potential, but an Amari Stoudemire or sort of like a Ben Simmons when you're talking about his body. Why don't we talk about what we like about him? What are some positives about Marvin
Bagley? Scoring. His scoring is very real around the basket. Mm-hmm. that's for sure. Actually, you know, one thing I think that is like, this is a really very specific thing, but he might be the best I've ever seen in this. His, like, multiple jumps, so when he's going for an offensive board and it's being contested, like, his ability to just get first jump, second jump, third jump is, it's ridiculous.
It almost gets like, higher. It's like a Mario Brothers, like, triple jump into a somersault vibe.
I remember I always used to be really, I always thought, like, Carmelo's second jump was super, it was, like, surprisingly quick.
Yeah.
And he is even like so much quicker, it's freaky. Like it is actually it's legitimately, I don't even know how to put it, like, you know when you're like, oh god, we're just also just becoming the Enes Kanter dump on Enes Kanter pod
becoming but, welcome to the show.
Like, you know when you'd watch the Knicks and you'd watch Kanter and you'd be like I don't know, his offensive rebounding, you're like, oh, that's cool, whatever, but like it didn't feel like anything special. It didn't look like anything special. It didn't feel like anything special or anything right. Like that. Like, his offensive rebounds, you watch and you're like, he has no business getting some of these offensive rebounds at all.
Yeah.
And I would say there's one specific skill of his that I think is truly like a generational talent, that is it. It is a weapon.
Yeah, truly just explosive athleticism. He's got great fluidity for his size. When you watch him on the break, he knows how to run it. He can dribble a little bit in transition. Real lob threat, rim running big. You know, kind of like you could picture him doing a nice DeAndre Jordan approximation on offense, I feel is fair to say.
I think the best way to, like, I think him and Carter would have been maximized on offense, not on the same team. Mm-hmm. Because they both, like, because Bagley, like, all right, he's another guy. He shot 30, like, basically shot 40% from three.
Right.
But he only took 1.8 a game.
Right.
Right. So it's like neither of these guys, neither of them shot enough that they could, like, reap the benefits of playing with each other fully.
And interestingly enough, we talk about free throw shooting being an indicator. Bagley's was not good. 62% from the line. People can improve that. I mean, we saw Miles Bridges make a huge jump from the 60s to the 80s this past year. But if you're looking for confirmation that his three-point shooting's real, he only had 58 attempts for the season. So only a couple more than Carter, not too many. 62% from the free throw line, whereas Carter, not unbelievable, but what was he? 74% from the free throw line. So that's a little bit more like, okay.
By the way, Bagley shot 77% at the rim last year, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Tyson Chandler-esque.
And what's crazy about it is, like, unlike Tyson Chandler, who is basically Roy Hibbert's bitch.
Goodness, I'm scandalized.
Unlike him.
You're going to owe me a one-star review with your potty mouth. Just
there, I thought you already got one on Twitter today.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Don't give this guy any shine.
But, like, I mean, 77% at the rim was, like, he was taking difficult layups and tough-angled shots and stuff. And even more crazy is everybody knows that he is going to go to his left. Everyone knows that he's going left. And it's, like, even though you know he's going to his left, it's still so hard to stop him because he's just so good at finishing.
He does have just remarkable, like, upper body control. You can see how he kind of positions himself as he flings his body through space. Mm-hmm. It really is impressive. But you touched on that. One of his glaring weaknesses is he kind of has no right hand when it comes to finishing.
Yeah, not at all. And that at the in the NBA, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. They're just going to play him to his weak hand. I mean, until he can prove otherwise. In just a moment, we are going to discuss Marvin Bagley's basketball IQ and his reputation as far as his work ethic goes. But first, just want to quickly remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. What's his reputation as far as a basketball IQ, gym rat type stuff? What do we know about him there?
Every scouting report that you'll read about Bagley talks about, like, he's got a high motor. Like, he's got a really high motor, plays his ass off. That's, like, on the Ringer NBA's draft guide, the first plus they have is plays his ass off.
Mm-hmm.
I have never actually, I mean, when I watch him play, it's effort to me is never a problem with anything I've seen from him. He's not, like, the best passer, but I'm not sure that and, like, a criticism I had of him earlier in the season was that he's like a black hole, and he is at times a black hole when he gets the ball in the post, but, like, I don't know, the numbers kind of, I think that he would be better in the NBA at passing, because I just think that, like, the way Duke was set up, so much the offense was set up for, like, him to score.
Right. And when you're taking most of your shots at the rim and you're shooting 72% or whatever it was, I mean, it's hard to fault a guy for being a little bit of a black hole. That's a tremendous rate of success.
Yeah. And I mean, he's not, like, I don't know. I just think that when you see some of the stuff he does in the open floor especially, it's hard to say that he's, like, a black hole. I think that he has potential as a playmaker. It's probably something that you need to, like, coax out of him a little bit. As a coaching staff, but it's not it is there. Like, he definitely has some playmaking potential. It just needs to be coached out of him a little bit more. And I think, you know, everything I've ever heard about the kid is that he's a really good kid, quote unquote.
So he's quick. He's, rangy. He's got kind of fluid body mechanics, at least offensively. Does that translate to the defensive end from what we know about him?
No.
No.
not at all. His defense is really bad.
Really? Alarmingly so, I would say.
Yeah, and he's actually a little bit younger than most of the people in this class because he reclassified to join. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, even adjusting for that, he feels like he's way behind defensively. And
what do you think is going on there? I mean, because when you watch tape...
He might just be an Amari guy. Like, he might just be one of these guys. Because I never thought with Amari it was about effort. I just think he, like, never got it. And right now when I watch Bagley, it just looks like he doesn't get it.
Scary.
I don't know if that means he'll never get it. I mean, you watch.
He's a big guy, but I guess he doesn't have a long wingspan, so that's something. Like, it definitely affects, even though he's a great leaper, it affects his rim protection. But you watch some of these drives where he's, you know, ostensibly the help defense, and he just sits there doing nothing. And you're like, what is he doing? Watching this guy just run to the rim without challenging the shot at all, even like fainting like that he's going to challenge the shot.
Yeah, it's like sometimes it's like there's no consistency in his mistakes. That's the scariest part, because there are times where it's like he's not aware at all and doesn't help at all when he should. And then there are other times where he helps for no reason. And it's like, if it was just one of those things, you would be like, oh, okay. So he has this tendency, and so we need to break this tendency. But it's like, it's kind of both. And then he's not even that good. Like, for as athletic and, you know, like, he's got really good feet, like quick feet, mm-hmm. For his size. But even for all those athletic gifts, like, he's just, even when he gets switched on the perimeter, he just is so, like, people talk about Carter all the time, and I always, like, when I watch them, I always thought Bagley was more of a liability in space than Carter. And, like, that's not a compliment, because
it's not what you would think based on their bodies. Like right. You know, Carter, he's not this huge, I mean, he's a really big guy, but when you watch him, he's, like, a little spryer than you might think when you look at,
like,
his...
Like, where do you think Carter ranks on the Rambis scale of big butts?
Not that high.
Yeah, not that high,
not
right?
Not that high, yeah. I was, when I really dove into the film, he's like an average athlete, but he was more impressive in that respect than I kind of led myself to believe. Like, he's not just dead weight. He's not just like this piece of lead that's going to sink you. I mean, the Enes Kanter story.
I knew that was somehow going to lead to some much-needed Enes Kanter shade.
Enes Kanter is an anchor that you accidentally unspool through the bottom of your boat. You, like, let it go into the floor. And it causes a leak to spread.
Enes Kanter is the iceberg in Titanic. It's like, oh, no, nothing's wrong with the ship. It's fine, it's fine. Two hours later, everybody's dead.
Starboard, right ahead, whatever he said. Dead ahead!
Smell ice, can ya?
Okay, so Bagley's not going to be available when the Knicks pick, but if he were, would you pick him over Carter? Let's say they were both available in this dream scenario, which they won't be.
Oh, man, that would be like... That would be the decision that I... God, I would hate making that choice, because it's like, that has the possibility to get you fired.
Roll right.
I would take Carter. I think Carter is just a better team player.
Right.
Even though I also believe that, like, Bagley is a better individual talent. I don't know enough about him. And, like, this is obviously where teams have an advantage because they meet with these guys and all that stuff. But it's like, I just don't know enough about him and his ability to learn. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's got that one skill that is clearly more elite than any one skill that Carter has, but does he only have that one? You know, like, he may have way fewer skills than Carter, and it may be a thing where you don't see it in the box score as much, but he's just Carter is someone who just, you know, oils the machine way better than...
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, with Bagley is, like, I don't... So, like, okay, if Carter can't shoot threes, right? Like, let's just say Carter is, like, they're both end up being 30% three-point shooters or something.
Uh-huh.
Right? Carter is still going to give you, like, plus value on defense, most likely. He is... I think he's just a more aware and natural playmaker than Bagley, where I think a lot of Bagley's playmaking comes from, like, him trying to score.
I think that's really fair. When you watch tape, it becomes pretty clear.
Yeah, and so, like, I just think that there's more ways that Carter is going to positively help your team than Bagley will if that three-point shot isn't there. And, like, if that three-point shot isn't there, he might just be, like, a more efficient version of Beasley, which, I mean, it's probably valuable. If Beasley was, like, super efficient, you could live with him being horrible on defense easier. But...
And wasn't, like, turn the ball over as much as he does.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess Bagley's just, he's really hard to, like, peg where he can be. I don't think he's going to be, like, a bust. I don't think he's going to be a bust at all. I just don't know if he'll ever, like, because the scoring talent he has immediately lends to, like, superstar projections, right?
Right. Like, I mean, he'll have a role no matter what in the NBA. Like, there's no way he's busting out.
Yeah, like, I think that he's going to be able to score. I think, depending on what team he goes to, which will probably be a shitty team, because the Celtics somehow don't have a top three pick this year. like, yeah, he'll
pair him with a competent point guard, he's extremely dangerous.
For sure. Yeah. I think, like, it'll be interesting to see what, like, Dallas does, because I know, like, they've been rumored to be big on Bamba, but, like, if Bagley drops there, I can totally see them,
like, that's interesting,
talking themselves into Dennis Smith Jr. and Bagley, which, God, that defense would be something to watch.
Bamba's the, in theory, GOAT, but he hasn't showed it on the court yet. I can so easily picture him being the best player in basketball, but he's so far from showing it in games. But, I mean,
So I feel like there are weird corrections that happen in the draft.
Yeah.
So, like, I think Bamba's standing in this draft is largely an overcorrection, an overreaction to how far Gobert dropped. And then I think that, like...
he's also so smart and charming. He talks about advanced analytics. You're like, ooh!
Yeah, he does, like, and he presents himself really well. That's really true. Bamba, like, 100%.
Knows what he needs to improve. Game. Yeah, like, he can talk about the game like Ben Falk or something. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, Bamba's like Littlefinger. He just knows how to play the game. No, he's not, like, a evil person. I'm just kidding. But, like...
Oh, Littlefinger is Carcetti, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I prefer HBO.
And then another correction in this draft, I think, which is actually, like, an appropriate correction, is, like, when Frank Kaminsky was a lottery pick somehow. And then, like, I see, like, Mo Wagner this year, and I'm like, oh, he's projected to go late first, early second round. Like, that makes sense. That is appropriate range for a player like that. So I don't know. Like, I know people, like, love Bamba. I don't know about him.
We're not going to get into that now, but I could see him developing to a point where he's just absolutely outstanding on both sides of the ball.
Right.
But it's, you know, he's got to do it. He's got to do it during a game. But do you have any, I feel like you've kind of picked these guys apart. Do you have any closing thoughts on Bagley and these guys before we say goodbye?
Yeah, Bagley's ceiling, I think, is like, I think it's like an Amari Stoudemire level, to be honest. Like his ultimate, I'm not saying his most likely outcome, but... kind of like if he were to become the best version of what he can be. I mean, and we could debate.
But this is the thing. I mean, this is when a fit comes into play, because if he's the lone big, I think that's fine and fantastic. I think it's scarier when you put him next to a KP, because right now he doesn't have the perimeter offensive game. So even just offensively, whereas I like Carter as a fit much better because I believe in his three-point shooting a little bit more, you know, I don't know that... I'm more worried about Bagley stretching the floor. Although maybe I shouldn't be, but that's just
where I'm at right now. So if you think, I mean, this is something to think about. Let's say, like, Bagley does reach this ceiling of, like, he's Amari Stoudemire, right?
Yeah.
But he's Amari Stoudemire that had I mean, Bagley is like an insanely good rebounder. Like, he's a really good rebounder.
Yeah.
He had a 21.5 defensive rebound percentage last year at Duke. And this is playing next to Wendell Carter, who had like a 23.2, right? So, you know, I don't know who ate of who, or maybe this is just exactly how they're going to rebound, but he's a good defensive rebounder. Like, him next to Porzingis offensively, I mean, that could be like, I mean, that could be really, really high ceiling stuff.
I can see that too. I can see it too. I just,
like,
with, I think, like, I just, think, like, I'm with, also, I'm partially just, you know, traumatized by Knicks history here, and at a time where at least all the noise is about the league going smaller, it makes just my gut reaction just, ugh, could the Knicks just for once kind of get on the train instead of trying to, you know, do this throwback old man bullshit? But it's also not exactly fair to these prospects either, because they're not Al Jefferson, you know?
Yeah. No, none of them are Al Jefferson.
And, which is, like, maybe where my mind is going to, as other than Cantor, as, you know, the total nightmare scenario for picking up.
Like, I think that, you know, I think you're very much on the Michael?
Yeah, however you want to say it.
Michael. And I'm like just edging it right now towards Miles.
Sure.
Assuming Carter is even on the board, which
he'll be gone. I think both these guys will be gone, but especially with Carter being a possibility, I wanted to dive into him. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Carter ends up going, like, maybe, I think, I don't know, Chicago's weird because they got this whole thing with Porter Jr. and, like, his medicals and all this stuff.
I think that's where he goes, Porter Jr.
Yeah, and I think, so, like, I don't know, I guess if Carter doesn't get picked by the Mavericks, I'm almost positive he's not going to get picked by, I don't think he's going to get picked before number five by the Mavericks. And if he doesn't get picked by the Mavericks, I'm 100% certain that the Magic aren't going to pick him at six. I'm pretty confident that Chicago won't pick him at seven. And then, like, I'm almost positive Dan Gilbert is not picking fucking Wendell Carter Jr. to, like, kickstart the post-LeBron era. Like, I'm not saying that as, like, I like Wendell Carter Jr., but he's not exactly a guy that you put on the billboard outside of, you know, your shitty Quicken Loans arena to, like, get everybody hype about the new era, right? Like, I just don't see him as that type of guy. I don't know who would be that guy, but I just cannot see Dan Gilbert picking Wendell
Carter.
I could see them,
I mean, based on what you said, this wouldn't be the answer, but I could see them being dumb enough to pick someone like Mikal Bridges, thinking that'll entice LeBron to stay. Like, I don't know. Like, look, we got you this NBA-ready talent who can help you compete for a championship. I really think that.
It is
ridiculous, but, like, I think
now we got a squad, LeBron.
Who's Colby Altman, really? Like, we know this guy's some genius.
He's a big Jordan Clarkson fan.
who is Colby Altman, really? Like, Gilbert hired him. Oh, so he must be good. You know, I don't know.
See, like that to me, I don't know. I feel like I just talked myself into Wendell Carter Jr. being an option at nine. Because I can't see, like,
I could see him being there easily, actually. I think he'll be gone, but I could see it. To me, it hinges on what Cleveland does. I think Ayton, Bamba, Doncic, Triple J, Bagley, I think Trae Young goes before, and I think Michael Porter goes to Chicago. So to me, it's like, that's kind of what I just said is sort of roughly the order I think it might go in. I think Sacramento might be seduced by the Mo Bamba train, but that's a whole other. Maybe I should be saving this. This is the
Sacramondo.
Sacramombo. I don't know. That didn't work at all. But yes, I think it's Cleveland when things are going to get weird. I don't really know what they're going to do.
Yeah, like, there was a rumor yesterday that they might draft Colin Sexton. I was like, yes.
That would make me so happy and be the dumbest thing ever. Could you imagine that?
Yes. I can. I can imagine. Like, there was that whole rumor this year where Dan Gilbert, they were like, yeah, like, Dan Gilbert really wants to keep Isaiah Thomas because he's a little guy and he fought against the odds to get here. And Dan Gilbert's like an outsider and he fought to get where he is. And I'm just like, dude, what are you? What are you talking about right now? I don't know. I think Dan Gilbert is going to want, like, somebody that creates awesome highlights.
So, like, Zaire Smith region?
Something like that. I mean, this is the
Lonnie
same organization.
Walker, maybe?
This is the same organization that picked Anthony Bennett number one overall.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, I just can't see it being Wendell Carter, man.
LeBron's not going to help him. Like, he's not going to be like, here's what I'm doing. He's not going to tell him what he's doing. So they're going to be drafted in the dark, and I think they're going to try to keep him because the thinking there is going to be, if you can try to keep a LeBron James, which, like, maybe that's right. I don't know. I think that's kind of stupid, but, you know. Yeah. But it's tougher when you're where they are. They're in a weird spot. It's when it starts to transition away from these kind of, you know.
Their team was sick this year.
A1... Whose team?
LeBron's. Yeah, just like somehow got through the Eastern Conference because everybody in the Celtics just had a season-ending injury.
Yeah, they wouldn't have made it through with Kyrie and Hayward out there. Although Ewing theory, you know what I'm saying?
Oh snap.
The most brilliant theory ever. Yeah, maybe when 37-year-old Patrick Ewing gets hurt, the Knicks are a little better. Oh, you think? Genius, you?
Whoa, Bill Simmons, slow down there with your next level 4D chess.
Okay, I think we've both outstayed our welcome somehow on this edition of Locked On Knicks. So why don't you close out by letting the people know where they can find you online, and then if you want to plug anything, throw that in.
You can find me at Schwinny Poo, spelled like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, there's Schwinny. No C. There's no. Yeah. It's not like Schwinn.
Yeah, Schwinny Poo. On the Twitter, and I guess I'm writing and posting and toasting now.
I feel like you have something up there. Make the people feel like you're legitimate, so I look better.
Yeah. So I have some prospect pieces up. I talked about Mo Wagner a little bit in this pod. I just put something up on him today, and then I had posted a couple more pieces last week. Lonnie Walker and Bruce Brown. Two Miami guys that the Knicks have been linked to. And then I'll probably have a couple more coming up. Maybe Jared Vanderbilt, probably the next one.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Schwinny.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, what can I say? It's another Pulitzer Prize winning episode of Locked On Knicks in the books. I'm going to go ahead now and ship this off to both the Smithsonian and technically it hasn't won a Pulitzer yet, but I'm going to send it to the Pulitzer committee, you know, for its consideration. If you guys want to do the same, I'd appreciate it. It'll only help me win even more Pulitzers than I've already won. But that's it for us. That's it for Locked On Knicks. Thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. If you have not already, tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. If you have not already, tell your friendly neighborhood cartographer about Locked On Knicks if they have not already. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Lots of bonus takes there. Lots of camaraderie. Join the fun. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Always salt the pasta water. Come on, guys. We've been over this. Don't disappoint me. Salt it. And take that, take that, take that. For data. Locked On Knicks, we're the best. Peace.